Blog Talk Radio.
Hold it now.
Productions, one of the few black internet radio stations that discuss black issues and solutions, presents Black Urban America. Now, if you want to participate, call 909-265-9215. If you got something to say or a question, press 1. Or you may go to www.blogtalk.com/WeTalkProductions. Now, Black Urban America come on every Tuesdays at 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. On Wednesday, we had Elephant in the Room with Zaka Zulu, formerly known as Jamarian Harris. On Saturday evenings, we have Provocative Thought with Carlton Sneed. And every third Tuesday, we have T. Nathan Farley, Melinda Medina, and Reginald Virgil. They are the hosts, Keep Calm, and Let's Discuss Racism. And starting in January, on the second Tuesday, this probably going to be a hit show here. Ann Dillon will be having live talk discussing healthy relationship. Everyone know what today is? It's election day around the United States of America. Don't you know, this year, we have close to 600 African-American women are running for office. And out of those 600, 97 are running for federal offices. And we also have some brothers, too. And in Tennessee, we have a record number of African-American women running for office. In Arizona, we have 30 African Americans running for office. Matter of fact, State Representative Reginald Bolden is one of the only two lawmakers in the state legislature in Arizona. In Alabama, we have 70 African American women running for local, state, and federal offices. In North Carolina, we have the Denise Adams is running for Congress. In Texas, Colin Alfred running for the 3rd District U.S. Congress. In Wisconsin, We have Mandela Barnes running for lieutenant governor, and Adrian Bell, U.S. Congress in Texas, 14th District. South Carolina, we have Brandon B. Brown for the 4th District in U.S. Congress. In North Carolina, we have Linda Coleman, 2nd District, U.S. Congress. And in Iowa, I didn't know there were black folks in Iowa. In Iowa, we have DeAndre Dijon, second running for Secretary of State. Now, that's only a few. That's not 500. That's not 600. But that's only a few. And I think, I hope that these brothers and sisters can be elected to offices so we can level some of this playing field, so we can put in some type of bills and policies that will affect the African-American community throughout the United States of America. Now, I had someone tonight. He works on the polls. He campaigns. And in Virginia, they're having a tight race for, I think it's a House of Representatives. I'm not sure, but he could explain that. But I just want to know why we feel the need to be a part. Why do you think it's important for us to be a part of this process? And in fact, oh, I forgot to mention, in the state of Georgia, we had Miss Adams, soon to be Governor Adams, first black woman governor. And in Florida, we have, I keep on forgetting his name, Brown. I think his name is Brown. I'll look it up in a minute. Run for governor in Florida. And I mean, I saw the debate a week or two ago. And let me tell you, this young man could wind up running for president in 2024. I'm telling you now. Mr. Poole, how are you this evening?
Well, I'm doing all right, watching the races, watching it all go down. Like, about relieved.
Yeah, so can you turn your volume up a little?
Okay, hold on 1 second for you. Let me get it for you.
Okay.
Is that a little better?
Oh, okay. It's a little better. I see that Ted Cruz is losing in Texas.
That's one I think they don't like. They don't like dealing with him. Even the Republicans down there don't like dealing with him. You know.
Yeah, I know.
It's hard to
vote
for somebody you think is a jerk.
How's it going out there in Virginia?
Well, where I'm at is the 3rd district. You got to understand, in the Virginia 3rd, it's made by design. It's packed with as many black folks they can take out of the southeastern and the core of the and the middle of the state, like near the capital, Richmond, as to make the 4 surrounding districts around it as conservative as possible, the 2nd, the 3rd, the 5th. But when you're looking at them right now, there are a few pickups in out of Virginia, and I don't think they were expecting that. They were, you know, you figure Democrats are looking to get rid of Barbara Comstock. Yeah, they got her. That's out of Northern Virginia. But I think the pickup that
Andrew Gilliam is losing in one of the counties. Excuse me, cutting you off. Andrew Gilliam, the brother that's running for governor, he is losing a couple of counties there for governor. So if I guess the polls are closed. So it's at the end.
Well, the thing about Andrew Gillum right now with their account, I see everybody's like, you see, I'm bouncing, looking at Fox News, looking at PBS, looking at MSNBC, and just the different accounts people have, is two of the largest counties in Florida that are Democratic counties, they haven't fully done a count. So their stuff is all over the map with him, which I'm hoping once the numbers go right, because it's still so close, you just, you know, as far as polling is concerned, it'll go better.
He got Tampa.
I think we can be waiting on Florida for a minute, at least for the governor race.
Yeah. So
if they call it for him, I don't know if they'll call it against them until they get those Democratic counties counted up. But it's just it's the wild west down there.
Lord. Because some of the counties are in and some of the counties are not. Let me ask you this, Carl.
Yes.
Why do you feel that we need to be a part of the political process in this country where the political process has not been kind to us, African Americans?
Well, I think the one main reason that as far as black people, black folks in this country need to be a part of the process is, you know, we are, as a population, the classical, prototypical minority. When you set up a binary between different racial groups politically, you think black and white. However, the numbers don't tell you that anymore. We're not that binary. We're not that second automatic thought. We're not even the largest minority population anymore. The demographics of this country is changing, and if we don't structure our voice to create an agenda that keeps us up to date, no one's going to think about us voting whatsoever. Not to mention, we vote so monolithically. And historically, we vote for one side or another when it's getting into a time period where you have such a polarizing thing, that polarizing a sense of just, you know, conservative or liberal. Democrats got our votes automatically last 30 or 40 years, at least. And it wasn't necessarily that they needed our votes, but we were part of what
since JFK, and prior to JFK, a lot of blacks were voting Republican. Most definitely.
But now,
right,
if you look at any candidate trying to get in office in any kind of black population, they automatically need our vote now. If we said, "Dog, we're not voting for you," then that's the last time that guy or that party is getting elected. I think the Democrats need us now, need our vote. That doesn't necessarily mean that we're hearing our voice.
We proved that last year when we stopped Ron Moore from becoming the senator in Alabama.
Yeah, but that's a disconnect, though. When it comes to black people voting, you're going to see Democrats cheerleading for us. But when it comes to Democrats actually doing something that's going to help us, especially when it's a heavily populated population filled with black folks, when you have cities that are primarily black folks or more than half black, and we've been there historically, you're not seeing where the leadership is doing stuff for us there. You're not seeing where the improvement is happening there. You're not seeing where advancements happen there. You're not seeing where things are getting built in there. I don't know if it's a matter of money or if it's a matter of party in that regard, but we're getting left behind in that way, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this. Is it important for these folks, is it important for us to run for office?
For representation? Definitely. Definitely. I don't think that, one, you know, you're going to, unless you have someone in there that has an innate understanding of what's going on with us, you're not going to see policy that even going to be nuanced enough to handle any of the problems, or at least to address the problems that you see that we have, or address the successes that we have. Representation is everything. I mean, we got a black president and a bigger vote from black people in the history of the country because we have representation.
Right. So let's say a young man was thinking about running for one of the local offices in any state. And what would you, man, I just like to tell everybody that Ms. Abrams is losing as of now, but it's still early. I'd like to tell you that the guy from Texas that I just mentioned for Colin Alford for U.S. Congress is winning by 12%. So anyway, so if a young black man age of 25 years old and said, "Mr. Poole, man, I want to get involved and what have you, I want to run for office. I think politics is one of the solutions to our issues. How would you advise this young man by going about running for an office? What do this young man or woman? We got like close to 600 women, black women, running for different offices through the United States. What would you tell? What would you advise them?
Get out and talk to people. Be authentic. If you look at the, like, especially on the more liberal side, progressive side, the most successful candidates, the reason you got an Andrew Gillum running up there, or if you, or to take, for instance, the Senate race in Texas, you look at Beto O'Rourke, you look at people who are authentic, who are trying to bring a genuine experience and tell them this is where I'm from, this is who I am, to people and voters face to face. If they do that, then I think, especially if you talk about a younger person who's running for office who may not have the experience, you're going to see them have that greater success. People need to get to know them. You know, they may not have the record to run on, but they have the authenticity to run on. You see a lot of candidates who are doing that right now, knocking out incumbents and taking over their spots, looking without having a race whatsoever in this primary election today, because they beat them out in the primary by being authentic. You know, they got to go talk to people.
Well, how do you build a ticket?
How do you build a ticket?
Yeah.
Maybe not like a one-issue voter or a one-issue candidate, but have a platform. This is the ideal of things I want to take to Congress or to the Senate. You know, give people a full understanding of what you're going there to try to do, and then give them something personal. Let them know that this is why I can tell you I can do this, or I can try getting this done. I think this is the day and age where everything is extremely polarized, and yeah, you know, it's almost cutthroat when you hear people talking about politics one way or the other. But this is also day and age people want somebody to believe in, especially on the progressive side. They want someone to believe in. Both sides, I said, for when it comes to black folks, because you see not only progressives who are going further left with trying to not just go off their idealism and just go off of their policy, but go off of this is why my policy works and get you to hear, you know, get have some faith in it. Both sides are trying to do that, but then again, I don't, when it comes to black conservatives, a lot of them I don't give a lot of credence because of that. That's a whole other discussion, though. Like,
well, for what I've been reading for the past month, you have a lot of young black men and women are looking at closely at the Republican Party. Why do you feel that's the reason?
Well, like I said, we're in a very polarized moment. Two, we got a very polarizing person in office who I think when it comes to conservative movement, you're looking at part of it being, one, an authentic rejection of the Democratic Party and the liberal side of things, simply because they've seen its failures. And then the other part of it, if you ask me, is kind of manufactured, whereas, hey, look, let's take a look at where we can knock down the liberal vote. And when it comes to knocking down liberal vote, like I said before, right now liberals and progressives need black people voting for them. Before they had them and they used them to vote for them, but now they actually need them to win elections. If we all said we're not voting for it anymore, you'd never see another Democrat get elected again. They need us now. And I think that's a recognized thing on the other side. So when you look at black conservatives, you have a core group of them that, it's a movement of, and it's brought out of the rejection and neglect you see from the liberal side. But part of that is manufactured. You can tell that. And that I don't like, but there's voices on that side that you need to listen to too, I think.
Do you think the Democrat, historically, do you think the Democratic Party has taken the black vote for granted?
Historically, you're talking about from 1865 on, I think both parties have at times taken the black vote for granted, if not completely dismissed and just thrown it to the side. Parties are about parties. Although you might have people with the core ideals and that want to do something for the country, but they look to preserve their ideals as much as they look to preserve themselves. And if you look at the history of both parties, Yeah, they've screwed us. They both screwed us over, and it's at times working together to do it, which is the truth, you know. But when it comes to, say, the Democratic Party in and of itself, at least for the last, like you said, at least since the '60s, the Voting Rights Act, that got us on their ticket completely. Not that black folks weren't drifting that way anyway, but that pretty much sealed the deal where you got 85-90% of black folks voting for them for the last 50 years.
Right.
Now, has that done us a lot of good? I mean, I break it down like journalist Tony Brown does. Black people vote Democratic, a fact. Now, Republicans know this, and so they also know that at best they might see 10 or 15% at best of any vote nationally. I mean, you figure George Bush Jr. or maybe his dad may have gotten close to maybe 10 to 13%, and that's probably as best as any Republicans done in a long time. And they know they're not getting much more than that, and so they don't focus on trying to get much more than that. Versus the Democrats, they know they're going to get 85-90% of the vote no matter what. So they're not exactly focused on keeping that vote. So you got one party that can get by putting out a halfway done platform that addresses some of the things that black people are talking about, and that way you can still have cities like Detroit and Chicago and New York with heavy black populations with still a lot of problems. And then
right.
You have another party that knows it's not going to get that vote and doesn't try and doesn't barely have any platform. And that's been the state of things. And Tony Brown broke it down like this. If you had black folks on both parties significantly, at least say 25-30% on one side and 70-75% on the other, now both parties got to compete for a vote. Now that actually this is something that's in play and they got to fight and work for it. Theoretically that sounds nice, but like I said, the Democrats need our vote now. As much as they got it of it right now, or else right now they're not getting anybody elected. Look at the blackest places, or look at the place with the blood, but let's still say different. Look at the blackest locations of anybody trying to get elected right now, and tell me a Democrat that does not need 85-90% of the vote to get elected. Stacey Adams will need 85-90% of the vote to get elected. She is black. She don't get more than that. She'll need all of us to vote for to get her in there. Andrew Gillum is going to need 95% of our vote to get in. He got a close race. He's ahead of it right now. Look at the blackest parts of Florida. They all voting for him. Now, let's say 30% of either one of their black vote, the percentage goes down. It goes to a Republican. They won't even see anywhere near getting elected. And that's just the truth. The white
right.
folks who are running for office are in the same boat. They need at least 85-90% of our vote in the places where they got a good black population or they're done. There are folks in Kentucky, in South Carolina, in North Carolina, in Minnesota right now, who you can look at any one of these guys projecting the vote, like go to MSNBC and Steve Kornacki talking about, oh, let's go to this urban area. He's talking about where the black folks live. They're telling everybody
right.
that, yeah, they don't do as good in this area, that Democrats going to be in trouble. He's pointing out on the map where we live at, because you need to get our vote to that degree or else they don't have the shot. You can look at this all night long tonight and see it.
So, how can we, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, how can we continue to have these parties, the Democrats, the Republicans, not take us for granted, and not only not take us for granted, when we get them elected to represent our issues on the local, state, and federal levels?
I think the only sure way to do that is, one, don't elect people that come from those parties if we don't see they're not going to be doing good. Don't elect people that come from a Democrat or a Republican, especially on a local level. If you've got city council members that are, I'm an independent, or I'm this party, or I'm that party, and they got ideas, be pragmatic about it. If we're pragmatic about it and vote for the folks that do make a difference, then the major parties will see this. That's the first thing. If you take away the vote, then what are they going to do? Now they got to compete to get us back. There are some places you see doing that. A lot of places you see that aren't doing that. Most places, especially on the East Coast, don't do that because the other parties don't either have the numbers or aren't strong enough. And the other thing is, a lot of black voters aren't constantly informed about what's happening. When something's going on, when an election's happening, and they might have the ear on it, but day to day, they're not on it. That's the other problem.
You said something profound just now. Day to day. How can you say something profound just now? Day to day. How can a regular citizen stay abreast or in touch what's going on day to day, especially city, local politics and city council or what have you? How can we do that?
Right. Well, I mean, if there's a monthly meeting to go to for your city council, people need to go to it. Heck, every neighborhood in the universe, I don't care how bad or good it is, has a civic league somewhere in and around it. I mean, where I live at, it's not quite the hood, but it's the hood, and we got a civic league. Staying involved in what's going on the ground level, that's the easiest and most, practice way to do it. But when you live in your everyday life, people are like, well, I don't have time for that, or that doesn't do me any good, or, what are they doing that it makes it matter? If you don't see it day to day, you don't see that it matters. I think that's a problem our communities have everywhere. And you know what? The national folks know it, and they depend upon that kind of you only tune in when everything's getting big sort of thing.
So how can we motivate? How can we motivate the everyday Joe or everyday Raheem or the everyday Tamika to come to the town hall meetings, to come to the civil leagues meetings, to come to the city council meetings where it's open to the public? Matter of fact, they show in some states. They show city council meetings on TV, on cable now. So how can we really get us involved? Because I'm telling you, if you look at other areas, if you look at other cultures, it's standing room only at their town hall meetings, at their city council meetings, and they vote. They know what's going on in their neighborhoods. How can we, as a people, be like that?
Well, I think the folks that, like I said, who are doing authentic campaigns got the right idea. We got to go door to door. People don't know stuff because, people aren't engaged in the places and the processes and at the meetings that they should be so they can learn it. But, it's not like anybody just in the hood or just walking around doesn't talk. They talk politics. They talk money, except it's more focused on where they're at politics. It's more focused on where they're at money. What job is here? What we going to this to get to, to put this together? What has this? The local gossip is as much politics and as much talking about money as you see. And that's just on street level, door-to-door level, your neighbors, the people you know, the person you go to work with. That's the level you got to start on, getting people engaged, or else it doesn't work. You won't get everybody, but as long as you keep those folks engaged, the one or two you will get will be the family members to the folks you want to get. And as you get more and more engaged, it'll end up being the person next to you, the person that your neighbor is engaged on something, and then that person lives next to them on the other side of them will be like, well, I got a friend that knows this, and I can go talk to them. And then you might hear at that level, talk with politics, talk about money, talk about engagement, civic league stuff. It's got to stay interpersonal like that. It has to stay engaging and interpersonal like that, because if you don't keep that level of engagement going and going and going, I don't think you get enough people that will tune in and stay tuned in. And if it becomes a habit after that, then there you go. The person you get engaged, that you get tuned in, will get the next person engaged and then tuned in,
Yeah. In fact, Andrew, wow. Andrew is tied as of now, and Stacy is losing badly, too. 65.2% to 35.2%. About only 16% of the polls have closed. The polls were closed at 7 o'clock. Yeah.
Then that means that Atlanta area and that county right above Atlanta ain't called in yet. There's some really, like I said,
Clayton County.
Yeah. You're talking about heavily Democrat, heavily black counties, and just a massive amount of votes that she can pull out of there. When they drop, if she's still behind, then I'd be scared. Right now, it's like, okay, let's
Right. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead. I'm sorry to cut you off, but I just wanted to have this. While we have the discussion, just like they're doing, you know, breaking news type of thing. Let's get the well, the results. That's what I'm trying to do with you, since, you know, it's kind of like ironic that I didn't know that I was looking on your timeline, and I really didn't know that you went on the polls and you're involved in politics. And it's ironic that we're having this discussion on election day, and hopefully history will be made while we're having our discussion.
Yeah, I'm saying the same thing. I see all this too close to call, that kind of stuff going on.
Yeah, it's too close. It's probably definitely too close. So tell me, you work on the polls. So what you doing on the polls?
Well, what I did today, because at my work I usually do security at one of the places that there is a polling station at, and I was watching them set up from 4:30 this morning. I left out at 5 this evening, a couple hours before the polls closed.
Mm-hmm.
Here, where I'm at, it's the third district. Basically, it's a crunch district made for a black Democrat. We've had Bobby Scott in there for years. He ran unopposed this time. But the thing is, in our district, you wouldn't have expected the kind of volume they had at a midterm when he's running unopposed and you just got a governor race a Senate race that no one takes seriously. It was if you ever heard of Corey Stewart, you know what I'm talking about. No one takes him seriously as a Republican, even amongst Republicans. So you figure in a Democratic district that's not really got an incumbent, hasn't had anything to worry about, you wouldn't have seen the kind of volume you saw today. There's a lot of people that came through today and stayed steady, really steady. And I think that was all over the city. That was all over between the second district right next to us, which is the race, that one of those races that the Democrats want to sneak a spot from. It's been really busy, and I think the turnout is saying something around here about that.
Okay, 92% has reported. Ron is 49.9%, and Andrew Gill is 48.8% as of now. 92% have just reported. Oh, I'm sorry.
Now, waiting for them to fully report. What's that, Miami-Dade? Like I said, once they get like the western part side of the state fully pulled in, if Andrew Gillum ain't got no points to state ahead, then it's a problem. Right now, they got a lot of big counties that haven't dropped all their numbers yet. So I'm still rooting for him, but you know, with Stacey Adams, I think they're going to a runoff by the time this ends. I don't know if anyone that's going to end up with. They need in Georgia, they have like 50% plus one, you know, in order for them to declare a winner. Anybody got less than that, then they have another runoff between the top two people. So I think they're looking at a runoff in a minute here. But it's scary to watch this because you want to see history get made, you know. You want to see something big come off tonight, and that's the thing that needs to be big coming off tonight over there.
This year I had somebody on, and he was saying that he was a poli sci professor. He was saying that black folks should have their own party. You know, we tried that in the early 70s and the late 60s. We had a black national convention, I believe it was in 1971, in Cleveland, Ohio. I think it was Cleveland, Ohio. And it really didn't work. It really didn't work. You think that would work now if we had our own political party?
I think if black leaders and intellectuals and economists and, you know, the sociologists, the folks, the big brain folks sat down and broke down an agenda that was one that was a plan to improve us as a, you know, as a race, as a people, as an economic block, then that might make more sense. If you
right.
get both folks on both sides of the aisle, both sides of the political spectrum, all sides of the economic spectrum, and talk about how we can create an agenda that we can make the other parties adopt or show them that they, you need to adopt this, this is what we want, that would work better. But right now, I think there's too great of a spectrum of political divide amongst black folks, not to mention the level of participation in things. I don't know if it's great enough to support a party. We would still, if they were a party, we would still be dependent on pandering or manipulating or jumping in between the two major parties. We'd have the same problem the Green Party would have or Libertarians would have or any other party would have. It might last for a few years and then break apart, and that would be the end of it.
Like the Tea Party. But look what the Tea Party did. To me, the Tea Party was a white supremacist party, and they are running the country now. And it started the day after President Obama got elected.
Yeah, but they were never separate from the Republicans. You know, they're still under that big tent of on their side. If they broke it off on their own, like I say, the Republican Party splintered, different story. But they never really did it. They just kind of took over the Republican Party from inside, knocked off the people they didn't like, and then kept going, mainly because, a black man was in a White House. There's no real Tea Party type thing that's up for Trump. You might have the so-called resistance. But basically, if you ask me, the resistance per se, that movement kind of got hijacked by the Democratic Party in part, but still is largely, like MLK said, white moderates that woke up one day and saw there was an idiot in the White House. I think calm Trump down, they'll calm down. Get rid of him out of the White House, they'll be like back to normal. Let's go back to the normal everyday stuff. Meanwhile, all these so-called quote-unquote woke folks will just go right back to sleep, you know?
There's one thing I could say about President Trump. It woke us up. I mean, black folks talk about starting their own businesses, schools, parties, political parties, and we got all this dialogue going on because really, if Miss Clinton would have won, we would still be asleep, and we'd really be talking about, oh, there's no racism, Colin Alfred looked like he got 52% of the vote in Texas, and he ran for U.S. Congress. So, just like during the President Obama years, we slept. This man, President Trump, woke us up, and now we got this dialogue. Everybody talking about we got to depend on ourselves or become more pro-black. We got black Republicans now talking with black Democrats. Like you said, conservatives talking to the left. We're having debates, discussion, which is needed. Now, I hope it's not too late.
Yeah, me neither. I hope so, too. I hope it's not too late before you see black folks across the board to do something. And I don't really think it is. I think right now we live in an era where we're not, when we have an era with so many folks focused on the growing number of Hispanics in this country, the tendency for a lot of folks, a lot of white folks, whether either part of the spectrum, is kind of like to put us to one of the sides that they're on. They already assume that, we're already the indoctrinated group. So it's like, you shouldn't be so worried about this. You need to be worried about these immigrants coming in to take your jobs. Or you need to be worried about this, that, the other. I'm like, why are you telling me what to worry about? There is a thought that is, we're not the assimilated ones, at least directly to you, because you can still see extreme amounts of political difference, extreme amount of financial and economic differences. So, no, we're not the assimilated ones standing beside you faithfully. No, and no black women cannot save you. Black women can save themselves. And you talk about what happened in Mississippi. Not Mississippi. You said what happened in Louisiana with crazy fool Moore. Black women didn't save them down there. Black women saved themselves, but they're still getting thanked for it.
No, that's Alabama.
Yeah.
Rob Moore's Alabama.
Yeah, Alabama, yes.
Yeah, but the difference.
But the expectation is, oh, black women will save us because they're going to be with us. Aren't you going to be, you know, I'm like, okay, are you with them? You know, I heard that. I'm like, are you with black women or, you know, are you going to save them?
It's ironic that you brought that up. We got more sisters running for political office than brothers. Why do you think it's that? You think our sisters are more well respected from other cultures, or other cultures still think the black man is the boogeyman? Because we're in the face of heavy negativity in this country. You know, they put our face on every negative behavior in this country.
Mm-hmm. Well, For example,
look at the sexual assault that was going on for years from white boys to their own women. None of them go to jail. But they said, I'll Bill Cosby to jail. And I'm not condoning what he did was right. I'm not condoning his behavior. But the only man thus far to go to jail for sexual assault is Bill Cosby. The domestic violence, white boys been beating up their women for centuries. The only one that they get the face on are the black NFL players of domestic violence.
That's true.
I'm not saying that brothers don't hit their girls. Yeah, they do, but we're the face of it.
Well, I mean, you know it's easy to send us to jail. Always has been. And that's the truth. Guilty or not, it always has been. Like when you see things going on with like Harvey Weinstein and all that, you're gonna see Cosby in jail long before you see Harvey Weinstein in jail. They may both end up in there.
He's walking around having dinner at high priced restaurants, man. You know? The paparazzi follow him every day. You know, and nothing said. No charges of press. Matt Lowry from Today Show. He's still living his mansion. You know,
well,
he's still living his
mansion. He's going to jail, but he's losing a lot of cash. That's when it's not going to end up. He's going to end up. That's when the he's going to end up going in the civil court, losing a lot of money over that for certain. It'll be him. It'll be him, just like they got Bill O'Reilly.
Yeah.
I don't know how much money he had to pay, but
he's still on TV. And he's still on TV. He's still on Fox, isn't he? Bill O'Reilly?
Well, no, he got fired. He got fired.
Oh, well, somebody pick him up.
And
what they do, they let the stuff die down, and in 3 to 5 years, they'll bring him back.
You might see him on cable, or you might see him on the internet, but I don't know if he'll be back on Fox. He made him shell out too much money. It was an obscene amount of money they made him that they had to shell out because of him. But he'll probably go to launch his own network or online or something. But he's got enough money already to do that.
Well, we have a president that was caught bragging about groping women. Nobody said anything to him. He let that be Obama, President Obama. Oh boy, he'd be in court right now. He'd be the second president in history to be outed. The first was Richard Nixon. He would be the second. You know, Bill Clinton admitted to having a affair with
Democrats. Anybody indicted or do anything wrong in the White House, because they have him so quickly, wouldn't it be funny? The first black president would had to live like a saint in the White House. He had no choice.
Yes.
None. None.
Yes. You know, he almost was a priest.
he couldn't make another woman. When he was in office, and I think it was Kamala Harris, when he was right in his last couple years with Kamala Harris, and he had said something to Kamala Harris, he was like, oh, he must be cheating on her. Oh, he's flirting with the woman. I'm like, what? He said something about
black
men
always flirting, right? Black men always flirting. We cannot be trusted, right? Oh, the sister from North Carolina, Coleman, is winning. She's winning. Liz Corbin, the second district, U.S. Mm-hmm. Congress. She's winning. She got 50% of the vote. I didn't get a chance to see the precinct. I guess it's 12% of the precinct. I don't know. Because mm-hmm. now they're going over North Carolina runnings and everything. But yeah, so this is, I'd like to thank you, Mr. Poole, for coming on, man. This is something else, man. You really enlightened me about the political problem. I campaigned for others historically, but I really not really be involved in depth in the political process. But how do you think these other people going to do? Like they didn't do anything in South. They didn't put South Carolina up there. I'm looking for Iowa, running for Secretary of State. Texas, I think Mr. Alfred going to win because he's been leading the whole race, and most of the Virginia, okay, your state, Falls Church, that's not your area.
Northern Virginia, that's really, really blue, really, really Democratic. If the Democrats lost up there, I hope it lost everywhere else.
Okay. We're looking at here, South Carolina. I'll have anybody on the. Oh yeah, Brandon P. Brown. Okay, I'm looking for him. And they're not telling no results yet. Maybe 1% of the vote or so. What do you think would happen if a lot of blacks got elected tonight? What do you think that would? What do you think that? Oh, Texas. Excuse me. I'm not really looking at that one. But what do you think would happen if a lot of African Americans would win their races tonight? What do you think that would consist of? How do you think people would react to that?
Well, with the polarized climate, you actually got what there are of the black candidates you're talking about up for election. At least 9 of those black candidates are Republican. So I don't think they're going to sort it all out until they see who ends up dropping. I don't think anyone's going to take the count of how many black folks are up there going to actually get into office tonight until they've got it all tallied and realize, wait a minute, how did this happen? I don't think anyone's going to do that until initially. But I think their initial reaction I figure you might see politically as a curiosity at first. But God help how they're going to do the caucus. How they're going to do the black congressional caucus out of that.
Well, excuse me. Why have they been so quiet? Why have the black caucus? I haven't heard anything from the black caucus. Why have the black caucus been so quiet in the last couple of years?
Well, I mean, they lost a lot of people. They lost a lot of people in 2010. They lost a lot mm-hmm. of people in, 2014.
Mm-hmm.
The Conyers mess, isn't quite never been settled because a lot of the caucus was very quiet and didn't say anything rejectful to them back then. So they caught flack because of that. And not to mention, I think they, by their function, they don't really make a lot of noise. You're truly talking about Democrats caucusing on that side. You'll never see a black Republican caucus on that side because, there's a few in South Carolina. Include, I think, one is Travis. No, actually, no, one, there's at least 20 black Republican in South Carolina who's the incumbent. He'll get back in. But I think that's the first effect. I think they're the first ones you're going to see counting how many new black folks come into the House. You're going to see how people counting how many new black folks come into the Senate if the one in the Senate, two of that got the Senate race to get in there. Crossing my fingers for Mississippi. But they're going to be the first ones you're going to see counting. And maybe with some newer folks in there, you might see more noise get made. But if you ask me, they're the most locked in to the Democrat. They're some of the most locked in people in the Democratic Party. The black caucus is, they're the more hardcore of the DNC, if you ask me. I don't know how that happened, but they are. They're some of the most hardcore people in DNC that you find. You know, they're the names you see get called out when you see Fox News talking about who's doing something they don't like this black.
Yeah, like Maxine Waters.
You'll see at least three or four of them if they actually win the House back, looking for committees, looking for a committee chair seat. It might be just, you know, sit back and wait for the power to come in, but there's a lot. They're going to grow if one way or the other off of this election for certain. I think the House is done. I think the Republicans are going to lose that one way or the other. There are too many seats that got open. You got 50 people that got their seats in danger, and all the Democrats need is like.
Okay. 96% in Florida has been reported, and we got Andrew Gilliam trailing by 2 percentage points, 50% to 48.8%. Whoa.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Mr. Poole, I'm going to let you go. I thank you for coming on the show. I enjoyed our little conversation, and let's stay in touch.
No problem. Anytime, let me know.
All right. You have a good night.
All right. Now, I'm going to watch some of this stuff. I might lay it down a little while, but, you know, I've got my fingers crossed for Georgia, got my fingers crossed for Mississippi. The rest of it, I like. Let's see those two.
Okay, yeah. I'm looking at the two closely, too. Have a good night, Mr. Poole.
All right, now.
All right.
All right, now. Thank you, Kenny. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right, now.
I enjoyed that. Folks, I guess we really got to really get into our local politics, our local state politics, as well as the federal. And we just can't come out, just vote. We really have to be involved in our community activities. Go to those town hall meetings. Go to those city council meetings. Because they really talk about your community. You know, try to prevent gentrification. Because we lost a lot of black communities in the last decade. Well, that's it. I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in. Tomorrow night, we got Jamarian Harris, Jaka Sulu. With the elephant in the room at 8 p.m. As always, I am because we are. We are because I am. Good night.